My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about Better Call Saul.
Yeah, and this week we are talking about the episode Breathe, which was written by Thomas Schnauz, directed by Michelle McLaren, and it originally aired on August the 13th of 2018.
Yeah, and this is, we're still kind of in aftermath zone. We're kind of beginning this drifting era. Jimmy is not handling grief well, and it's spitting out in different places while also looking for a job.
Yes.
Trying to figure out, this war between like what he actually likes doing and having a job in the wake of this grief.
Yeah. If he's not a lawyer, what is he? Right. Yeah. Finding that he can't work for Marx. Is kind of a part of this, because we get a little mini arc. He meets his next mark. He applies for a salesman job at a copier company. That is owned by a character named Mr. Neff. This is played by Andrew Friedman. You don't recognize that name, but you recognize this man. This is Uncle Jack from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah,
old tiny hands Jack.
Yeah, he's like, oh yeah, Uncle Jack. Always a pleasure. The other guy is somebody too. His associate is also a character actor who I know from stuff. Kim gets a really good scene in this where she kind of explodes. I love it when Kim shows emotion.
Yeah.
As a thing that doesn't happen very often in the first half of the series. Jimmy is being emotionally disconnected from her. She's trying to process that, but she's also, I think this is comes from a genuine feeling of like a lot of love for this person and sympathy for what he's going through too.
Yeah.
She's processing it. And then also just like, fuck, I care about this person. I have to protect them from this shit.
Yeah. It's like, Howard, like you think that you are being Johnny on the spot and taking care of everything. You have to look at the effect that this is having.
This is from other people's perspective.
Yeah. Importantly, neither of them have the piece of information that Jimmy has.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gus sets out trying to improve Hector's odds for recovery, trying to get him an exact amount of recovery. One of the most artificial things in this prequel in Better Call Saul is Gus's degree of, I need Howard to be a certain amount, Hector to be a certain amount of sick. He can't die, but he can't be too sick.
Yeah.
But he can't be too well. Like having to set him up in this position specifically so in like 10 years he can blow him up, try to kill him. It's pretty silly.
Yeah.
He does turn his eye towards Nacho though, which does introduce a really, really tense and good dynamic.
Yes.
For this.
Yeah. This episode ends on a fucking brutal scene.
Super brutal.
Yeah.
Throwing a little bone to people who are looking for, Breaking Bad-esque ultra violence.
Yes.
Production
details are light, mostly focused around how they filmed that brutal scene. Because Arturo's gonna bite it. Old sleepy eyes Arturo. Also they included a shot that mirrors a shot of Mike in the episode Say My Name when he's about to be caught by the DEA.
Yep. And I'm screaming I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
at the wiki. Oh, cool. It mirrors a shot from another episode where he was sitting on a bench.
Would it
be weird if it didn't? Like, he's a guy, it's Mike sitting on a bench.
Yeah. That's where he recharges. That's like his charging dock.
Yeah, it's his fast travel
his park bench.
That's how Mike zips around.
Is there any substantial connection here? Like, is this supposed to echo that?
Yeah, between Say My Name and this?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Like, no, the shows are in very different places. It's just... directors doing directory shit.
Wouldn't
this be fun? You can do it.
Yeah.
Are you asking if it's possible? Because yes. You're asking if it's fun though. I don't know. We cut to a very fun thing, which is a stealth medical examination. Dr. Goodman inspecting Hector under cover of darkness while Victor does spotting and does signals to get him to turn off the light. This is very cute to me.
Yes. He's got like a little pen light. He's like checking his feet and stuff.
For reactions. He's touching sensitive parts on his body to check
doing basically like nerve mapping kind of stuff. Yeah. he looks out the window and Gus is just standing there.
Yeah, just staring at the window. Goodman gives his report to Gus in the car, basically saying like, he's no longer in a coma, but he's non-responsive. It's really uncertain. He's getting very good care here. Things might be different if he's at John Hopkins. It might not be. You know, I don't know. You know, in the end, I can think of no better judgment for this man. Isn't this what he deserves? And Gus goes, I decide what he deserves. No one else. Which is to live for the next few years. Mm-hmm. Like, he does get to see, you know, his other nephews die and stuff, which I understand is Gus's point. But it's just very funny, the fine line of distinction.
Yeah. To live, but not live well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And live a very specific tuning of that.
Yes.
So Kim wakes up and Jimmy is juicing out in the lifting weights, you know, pumping iron, injecting tea directly into his ball. He's making juice because he's getting a head start on job interviews. And Kim's like, you can take some time off. And Jimmy's like, well, why not now?
Uh-huh. Well,
let's do it.
Yeah. We can handle two incomes. She's a lawyer, Jimmy.
Yeah. You know, but he wants to get out and start doing stuff.
Yeah.
This is also very well observed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What am I going to gain by sitting around the house? Yeah. Right.
Kim says, you know, what about that meeting? And Jimmy's like, you know, no, I'm not going to that meeting. If there's anything important, Howard will just send it along.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Manuel, Nacho's dad, shows up to the upholstery shop to open things up, and Nacho's there waiting for him. This is very tense and, you know, kind of heartbreaking because the bridge has been crossed, right?
Yes.
Nacho is, you know, trying to comfort him, saying, you know, Papa, it's over. And Manuel just doesn't respond. He just lays out the money that Hector gave him in that intimidation scene in Lantern.
And Nacho's like, oh, no one's going to comfort you and keep this. Manuel says nothing, so Nacho takes it. Mm-hmm. Nacho tries to leave. Manuel says, when will this be over for you? And he says, I'm working on it. Like, Nacho is trying to get out of the game.
Yeah. When will it be over for you?
Yes.
Right? Saying like, oh, yeah, you know, so Hector's not going to be a problem anymore, but like, you're still doing this. Like, that's kind of the problem. You know, you think that it's what's going to happen in my shop that concerns me. It's like, no, you've admitted that you're out there doing crime shit.
Yeah. You're with the Salamancas. That's no good.
Yeah.
Jimmy pulls up to his first interview, fixes his hair, finds a loose hair and winces at it. You know, he looks really, this is very sharp for an interview. He's, you know, snappy dresser for this. Yeah. This is at a hilarious copy machine store with rotating old-timey copy machines on little platforms here. Really, really good.
It's like a little copy machine museum.
Yeah. And he gets, we get a nice little bit of implied backstory here. This, you know, he's talking to the assistant manager and this is the best interview that anyone's ever given for anything.
Oh God. Yeah. No, he's knocking it out of the park. Just
knocking out of the park.
Dingers left and right.
Yeah. Working in mailrooms. He knows a lot about copiers. He's pretends to be shocked to learn that a copier that he worked on could counterfeit $5 bills. He certainly used that for fake IDs. That exact copier in his fake ID business that Chuck tells him, reminds him that he had.
Oh, I guess I forgot about that connection. Yeah,
he's going, it can. he's used that.
Yeah. Yeah. I read it as him being like, oh, I could have used it for that. Fuck. Hmm. Yeah. But like, he's giving a lot of, like a lot of very specific knowledge about these things. Yeah. You know, and as they're going around, like, this is a thing where like you go into a family business and the person like who is, you know, you're not there to like learn about the business. You're there either to conduct business or to like apply for a job. And like the person just kind of like gives like here's all of this stuff about a person who's not here anymore.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's the weird way. I said this before, but like the job interview, the entire job thing is this weird mutual lying thing that we have set up with each other where like you have to pretend to be interested in shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody's going to apply for a copier job because they admired this fucking old man who doesn't work there anymore.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Uh-huh. Like they would just want, like if somebody's coming in for a job, for that kind of job, they just want a job. That's nobody's calling.
No.
We all just have to admit their jobs. There's nobody's calling. People just will do it for the money, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember when I applied for the job at that creative studio, like the second, like the follow-up interview was like mostly just the person who was interviewing me, like telling me who the partners were.
Yeah. And it's like, cool. You know, this weird way to try to shortcut respect. You know, like, here's some people, they're pretty good. So you'd be pretty lucky. Mm-hmm. And it's like, do you not realize there's just unlimited, you know, prestigious partners on tap at every single place? Mm-hmm. They're all basically the same to me until I work there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it goes in play with the, you have to pretend like something is your passion for something, where it's like, sometimes, you know, you can work somewhere where it obviously is your passion, but you also have to just be like, you know, they'll be like, why do you want to work here? And you have to be like, you know what? I love people and I love challenges and like just bullshit. I hate the facade.
Yeah, it's terrible. Like, it did Can you do the job? Yes, I can. All right, yeah, cool.
Exactly. Can you do the job? Or do you go to work on time? Can you pay your bills on time and shit?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, are you mildly dependable and are you okay to be around?
Yeah.
You know, and you can't just ask those things because everyone will say yes. But I think this getting to that information by saying, like, what makes you passionate about scheduling appointments is, it feels like it should be a trick question and you should get the job by saying nothing. Like, no, my passions are elsewhere. This is a living and I need it.
Yeah.
You know, that's our mutually yeah. beneficial
yeah.
thing.
That work needs doing and I need the job doing it. Yeah. Yeah. But during this grand tour, he notices a Hummel figurine on a shelf of knickknacks. I love this. Because like, oh, his time, like all the time that he put in as an elder law specialist, ends up being useful to him and his, you know, kind of fucking demimonde that he enters into. It's like, oh yeah, no, like this incredibly upstanding thing gave me access to very specialized information.
Yeah. Yep. Mr. Neff shows up for the interview, and Mr. Neff stops almost right away when he notices that Jimmy is a lawyer. He's like, you know, that's weird until very recently. And Jimmy disarms with a lawyer joke, just basically saying, you know, doesn't explain that he's on probation or anything.
Yeah.
Just basically saying, like, as a lawyer, this is what I did. You know, this is actually really, really important, really similar to what I do. They said they're going to make the decision by the end of the week. And Jimmy stops for a moment and turns around and presses them. He's like, listen, I know you want to deliberate, but let me give you the sell. And again, best, you know, interview in the world, talking about opportunity costs, like the week they're deliberating could be week he's out there making, you know, sales for him, talks very poetically and romantically about the copier being the heart of a business.
Yeah. You know,
things that he would say in a sales situation.
Yeah. And he's being really theatrical. Like he's throwing his arms around like it's fucking network.
Yeah.
You know, and like saying, yeah, it's the beating heart, ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. Yeah. That's a good business with one of your copiers.
Ka-chunk, ka-chunk. You know, and Neff and his assistant talk briefly and he goes, you know what, you got the job. And Jimmy doesn't want the job. He liked doing that part he just did to get in, you know, and he's like, oh, so just like that, huh? And they're like, yeah, you know, and they're really happy. And I feel really bad for these guys.
Yeah.
He's like, are you out of your mind? You don't know me. Uh-huh. Like, I just came off the street. I could be a serial killer. I could be a guy who pees in the coffee pot. I could be both. Uh-huh. You know, really, really harsh. I was trying to think of like being in this situation where you interview somebody who shows passion just to fucking troll you. I don't think it's ever happened before.
It would be so fucking confusing. Like these guys, like just here's this fucking character who came in and like you can tell if the, like when the subtitles are on, when they're doing their little deliberation after Jamie does this, you know, big speech, like can you imagine him out there doing that? Like for us?
Yeah.
You know, like, wow, he really wowed us. Jimmy is displaying extreme, you know, capability here.
Yeah.
But this
huge
is
competency.
Yeah.
It's just in something he has no interest in fucking doing.
Yeah. And you also, he doesn't want to work for a mark. He doesn't want to work for a level seven susceptible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, at this point, he's going to work for a cell phone company at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's not a mark, but I don't think he thinks, you know, particularly highly.
Regarded
highly. He doesn't want to do this and stuff's coming out.
It's wolves and sheep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's wolves and sheep. It's and he's in a grief moment, like a grief fugue where things are not like being properly sublimated. Here. You know, in a weird way, one of the things about Jimmy's arc in terms of like, it's not her fault in any way. Mm-hmm. But when he says, you know, I'm no good at building things up, I'm just good at tearing things down. And she says, well, why not do what you're good at?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is kind of a trajectory he sets himself to.
Yeah.
In this. You know,
but yeah, he leaves saying, suckers, you know, I feel sorry for you.
Yeah. Really weird. Goes out to the steam, calls another place, and is like, yeah, I'll be there in 20 minutes. He's just doing this all around town, showing that he could take your puny jobs and doesn't want them.
Yeah.
And I was like, the interesting thing, like, he'd be great at selling copiers. He'd be great at doing any of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's kind of like how he's a good lawyer, like a straight lawyer, but doesn't like doing it that much. Like, an interesting thing that I think about a lot that I've, you know, kind of come to learn is that the things, you know, we talked about this before, the things you're good at and the things you like doing are completely separate and you confuse them at your peril.
Yeah.
You know, the being really, really good at something can be a wedge by which people use to exploit you.
Yes.
You know, I've been good at like office bullshit and been told that, and that does feel good to be told that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also a person and should be thinking about what I like.
Yeah.
As well. You can short circuit that shit just by being good at stuff. Sometimes, like, you know, you always ask yourself what's in it for you with this stuff too.
Yeah. But, you know, Jimmy's out here, like, demonstrating his potential, right? This potential that nobody thought he had.
Yeah.
You know, and or he thinks that nobody had. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike's at the park with Kaylee, and God, it just mirrors this shot from Say My Name, and it gave me chills.
Exact same situation here.
Yeah, exactly. Because instead of getting a call from Walter telling the DA after him, it's a call from Lydia asking them to do nothing. Like this little thing that doesn't advance anything.
Yeah.
Lydia wants to meet. They are there at a resort spa conference room, and the scene is kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, "What did you do in La Cruces?" You know, and he says, "Oh, it's better cover." Mm-hmm. You know, and you had a couple things need correcting. That needs a bonus. And she says, "You know, this is just a paper transaction. Mm-hmm. This increases the rate of exposure." And Mike goes, "No, I'd say lowers it. I'm going to do this again for all the terminals." And she, you know, "If I ask you to reconsider, I'd ask you to do the same." Mm-hmm. And she tries to, like, you know, do the stick. At the moment, you have Gus Fring's respect. I'd want to keep that if I were you, thinking she's going to tattle on him. But Gus doesn't have any time for this bullshit because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no.
You know, this goes nowhere, this little, like, plot lit. But again, we get Mike at Madrigal, which I like.
Yes. Yeah. Just a disagreement. Like, does more surface area, does more FaceTime. You know, I just, God, show me the other seven. Show me the other seven logistics hubs.
Yeah, give me the spinoff. That, I mean, there are special features on this DVD that are him doing, you know, security consultant lessons.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
Yeah.
So they leaned into that. We get a funny scene here. Dr. Maureen Bruckner comes from John Hopkins to the Hector's hospital room. The person who was there before is really nervous, and she's like, "I'm going to be taking you over. I'm sorry if that." And he goes, "No, it's fine."
Yeah,
and gets out there because the cousins have just been staring daggers into him with like a fucking fix it expression.
He's a. No, she's like, "Oh, you can we can co-manage care, like, you know, I'm just here to, you know, on a from a benefactor who wants me, you know, the most competent doctor who has ever been." Yeah. Like, no, you can take this guy. So she's the most competent doctor who ever was showing up, and she tries to, like, say, "Oh, we can co-manage care," but this guy is like, I want out of the Salamanca room, please."
Yeah, this sucks. And she's very funny. This character, I'm glad that she's not around for a long time because she's very silly to me.
Yes.
Her hyper-competence and the fact that she is not unnerved at all by the cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what to make of it. The idea is just she's like very open-minded and, and she speaks Spanish and everything for everybody. But, like, they are cartoon monsters. Like, it is like doing this to two ogres.
Yeah.
They're dressed in matching silver suits with snake boots. Like, this is not normal in any respect. And her complete obliviousness to it is weird to me.
Yeah. It's funny, but I do not know if it's intentionally funny.
Yes. I don't know if the actress made the right choices, or the director made the right choices, or the writing made the right choices to thread this needle.
Yeah. But she's kind of explaining her approach to the cousins, and like they will speak to her, not much, but like they kind of perk up when she starts speaking Spanish. Like, nobody ever tried that before.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, "Okay, this is what we appreciate." Nacho and Arturo show up, you know, and they're shocked that the cousins are there. Dr. Bruckner goes, "Well, he's here, talk to him. You know, he can hear you on some level." Like, again, just not menaced at all by everyone's stony demeanors.
Yeah. And also telling the cousins, talk to him.
Yeah. And there's a long silence, and Marco just says, tells Nacho and Arturo to speak. This is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what to say. They hate Hector because, of course, they do. He's a monster man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're just like, things are still good on the streets. You know, all the, you know, all the counts are coming in good.
Yeah. You know? Nobody's fucking with us. The Salamancas are strong.
Yep. You know, and the cousins, you're like, look at them and start going, you know, "You're going to get through this, you know, Nacho, you're going to get through this stronger than ever."
Looking at him like he did, trying to make Hector catch on fire with his mind.
Yeah. Lydia calls Gus to tattle on Mike. And, he's like, "I don't think he's reliable." Gus goes, "He is reliable." Mm-hmm. He says, "I don't want to spend time worrying about him." And he goes, "Then I suggest you give the man a badge." And just hangs up because nobody has fucking time for Lydia.
Yeah. No.
Imagine having patience for Lydia.
But Tyra shows up to report on what's happening at the hospital. And Gus spends some time looking at, Hector's chart. And he tells Tyrus to call Victor for a meeting. I had no idea what this was or how Gus figured it out. Something I read in the IMDb trivia helped me put it together. Like, oh, he's supposed to be seeing that there's none of this drug. Like, he's supposed to see something that implies that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. If that's what it is, it does feel a little like super intuition.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, still.
But I mean, it's poorly communicated if that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I'll accept it. Mm-hmm. It just needs to happen for this dramatic situation to be set in motion. Kim shows up at HHM as Rebecca is finishing signing for the discharge of her portion of Chuck's estate. Yeah. And they say, you know, Kim, you know, Jimmy can go through the wreckage to take whatever doodads he'd like.
Yeah.
And Kim's just like, he doesn't want that.
Yeah. You know? The garage is mostly untouched. Yeah. Yeah, any like, keepsakes, well, any reminders?
Yeah, there's a lot of tape recorders and stuff in there.
Uh-huh.
Howard hands over this agreement letter. And Kim guesses that's going to be $4,000.
Yeah.
It's $5,000. This is the minimum. $4,000 is the minimum, so you cannot contest it. You cannot argue that it is you were left out of the will.
Yeah.
On purpose. And then, really interestingly, so, like, there's a scholarship endowment that Howard sat for this, or that Chuck set up. Mm-hmm. And Howard wants Jimmy to sit on the board. This was not Chuck's idea.
No.
Howard's trying to, like, sweeten the pot because he knows this is a weird pittance.
Yeah.
Like, Chuck is very rich. He mm-hmm. just got $3 million before this thing. Like, Chuck is very rich.
Yes. You know, and trying to just throw Jimmy anything, right?
Yeah. He's also, yeah, there's a letter. He goes, for Jimmy's eyes only.
Uh-huh.
You know, Rebecca leaves, you know, tells Kim to give Jimmy her best. And Kim stays behind to talk to Howard. And again, I love it when Kim shows emotions. Mm-hmm. I do, like, on rewatch, I do feel a little bit like I remember there being a lot more Kim in the first half of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And more stuff for Kim to do and bounce off of.
Yeah.
Like, I would never say Kim's not important in the first half of the series, but mm-hmm. like her in ultra reserved mode, that she's that way for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it makes these breaks really satisfying as mm-hmm. a thing. But I do think that Kim's arc really does kind of come into its own in the back half of this season and in the next season.
Yeah.
Is when Kim starts mattering and starts feeling like a principal character to me. Mm-hmm. The fact that, like, she didn't do a lot and we're just kind of like following her jobs mm-hmm. that she popped through and everything like that, like, made the montages of her calling people with post-it notes feel superfluous.
Yeah.
Like, she did not feel like a main character for a while to me.
Yeah. It's a less severe version of what happened with Nacho, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Nacho is kind of coming into his own around the same time.
Yeah.
As a thing, like, Howard left to make room for Kim and Nacho.
Mm-hmm.
As main characters.
Oh, and also for Gus to show up as well.
For Gus to show up. You know, but we don't really get Gus POVs very much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting, you know, characters who we're, like, rooting for. Protagonists, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, protagonist room. And, like, it's just, it's interesting to see her actually break. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really welcome to me. And in my memory, I remember there being more going on with her before kind of the first half of, you know, the first part of season, you know, three. Like, when she starts getting kind of more to do after mm-hmm. the accident.
Yeah. But she's here to reality check Howard. You know, yeah. I just had to know, what were you thinking when you came to Jimmy on the day of his brother's funeral and laid that shit on him?
Yeah. You know, and this, like, is, you know, Howard's speechless, this whole thing, mm-hmm. you know, and this is all really, really good mm-hmm. like stuff. You know, he's like, I just thought Jimmy deserved to know. We go, oh, did Rebecca deserve to know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, really good delivery.
Or is it just Jimmy?
You know, oh, we can scrounge around the ruins, you know, put it on the board of the scholarship that Chuck would have never given to Jimmy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then this letter, you know, that we know is going to be fucking horrible,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and Howard knows it's going to be fucking horrible.
Yeah. You know, what's this one last screw you little brother from beyond the grave? Am I really supposed to do this to him?
Yeah.
Like, it's a, you know, like, okay, well, no, like, I'm implicated in this. Like, Jimmy is hurting. I don't know why. It has something to do with this, and you are failing him.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, you think you're going through the motions they have to go through, but you're not thinking about it, mm-hmm. you know, as much as you should. Like, we never get to see, you can correct me because you've watched ahead. Do we ever get to see anything with the letter?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a heartbreaking scene. Okay. You know,
yeah.
It's weirdly sweet,
if I recall. Is that true?
Or it's a sweet letter. It was obviously written before before what happened. You know, the unpleasantness.
Yeah.
It's another wedge between Jimmy and Kim before they come back together.
For Kim, it makes perfect sense for her to believe this is just going to be nonsense.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just going to be cruelty.
And we're still having to fucking deal with this guy, even though he's gone. Yeah.
And Howard is mortified This is a real, this is also very relatable to me as a thing where you get rightly called out. You need to be called out and you recognize it and you just say, you know, what can I do? Like, you know, you're right. Like, and this is not bad, a bad thing for him to do, to say this. No. He's already done the bad part, but him just saying, what can I do to make it better is the right response. That's restorative justice. You know, is there anything I can do?
Tell me.
You know, and she goes, nothing. There's nothing you can do. Just stay away.
Yeah.
You know, which is true. It's said harshly, but it is true. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't fix this. You have this overwhelming desire and urge to make things better all across the board with this. All these things you're doing with Jimmy, telling about the suicide, doing all, putting him on the board. It's not helping.
No.
You do not have capacity to help right now. Stop trying, because you can only do damage.
What you are trying to find in, you know, keeping Jimmy close is not going to be found there.
Yep. It's just not going to work. No. Jimmy gets home with their food, and he knows what movie channels are going to be showing. White Heat, you know, with no commercials, and Jaws 3 with commercials.
He calls it a real Sophie's Choice. And I love Kim saying it's Jaws 3D, to be exact.
Jimmy, you know, tells her about his day. Just says, you know, I got some leads here. They put on White Heat. And Kim smiles at him, and they start making out and have presumably had sex instead of watching White Heat.
Yeah.
We catch it later where Jimmy's lying awake.
Yeah.
Here.
He gets up and looks at eBay to see the value of the Hummel that he saw. It's not the Alpine Shepherd boy, it's the Bavarian boy. And it's worth almost $9,000.
Yeah, expensive Hummel. He goes out to the balcony to call Mike to try to offer him on the heist. You know, finders fee, gets a voicemail. Mike's not going to go in for this bullshit.
No, no.
Nacho and Arturo roll up to the warehouse for the pickup. And Arturo says, we're taking six, you know, and Nacho's taken aback by that. He's like, no, this is what Hector would have wanted. You know, he's taking Bolsa's, you know, words to heart.
Yes.
If I handle this well, I can move up. You know, they're only five out. He's like, I'm taking six. You know, Salamanca's get six. And this is really tense. And Nacho pulls out his gun to back him up.
Do you really want to do this? And Victor just lays out the sixth brick. Yeah,
because Victor knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, had to put up a little bit of a resistance. You know, they're walking out to their car, and Arturo's like, man, do you see those guys pissing their pants? And the beautiful shot where we see them walking next to, between two truck trailers, and then we see a shadow parallel walking with them that they can't see. It's really good.
Yeah. And then the shadow crosses over and gets up behind Arturo and puts a plastic bag overhead, seals it at the neck, and then hog ties him.
Yeah.
This is Gus. This is Gus in full box cutter mode.
Yeah. While Victor or Tyrus, can't remember who, restrains Nacho.
Yeah. Just restrains Nacho and holds him pointed at Arturo.
Yeah.
Making him watch, you know, making him see, you know, just, okay, here's, you know, like, yes, you're mine now. He's going to say it, but like, it's very much, you know, again, box cutter parallels.
Yeah.
This is exactly what he did to keep Jesse and Walt.
Yeah. Show yourself killing somebody in a brutal way.
Yes.
It's his ultimate card. Once he fills up his EX meter, he can do this. he looks at Nacho and goes, I know what you've done. The Salamancas do not. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, and Nacho is still freaking out watching Arturo die. You know, look at me from now on, you are mine. And Nacho has to watch Arturo breathe his last, and it's real scary because he's suffocating in a bag like a goldfish, but with human body parts instead of fish body parts.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, just thinking about it from Arturo's perspective, just like, you have no idea what's going on.
All of a sudden,
can't breathe, you can't move, and then just lights out as you fade.
Like, you'd recognize at some point, like, a bag was around your face.
Well, yeah.
You know, but that's the not knowing why or anything like that. That's like very scary.
Yeah.
You know, who
you didn't see who did it. Yeah.
Yep.
You're just gone. Game over.
Yeah, just it for you. Very scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the episode. Setting up a really, really brutal status quo for Nacho. I have tons of sympathy for Nacho in the show.
Yeah.
Kind of just doing a little bit more with the push me, pull me mechanics of Jim and Kimmy. Like, what's interesting is this is the beginning of their wedge arc. There is a noted, because I haven't watched ahead, but I have like read ahead on this. Huge uptick in them having sex.
Yeah.
They have sex a lot from now on. Something about, you know, the grief and where they're at and how they cannot communicate with each other properly is coming out in different ways.
Yeah.
In a way that's really well observed. They were physically expressing their love because neither of them will fucking talk to each other.
Nope. Seems bad. Bad to me.
Was the style at the time. What can people do if they like this show?
If people like the show, they can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and kick us a few bucks a month. You get some stuff, but also you support us. Like, your support is the reason why we can do these shows.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, and it lets them happen. Mm-hmm. There's a direct relationship. Yeah. You can also leave us ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, subscribe anywhere you can subscribe to podcast, talk about us on message boards, talk about us on Reddit, join the Reddit, talk to us in the Discord, mm-hmm. and other people are having good discussions about the show.
Yeah.
In the Discord. Come check it out. And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen, who also did the music for the show and is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gwen.
And I think that's about it.
Think so?
Yeah. Until next time, breathe.
Yeah. Don't leave bags around, especially if you have pets.
Mm-hmm.